This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
It may not be fully appreciated, but 90 years ago in 1936, it might be one of the most important years that the game of American football has ever faced. And we're going to culminate this week of celebrating 1936 by sort of having an overall view of that 1936 year and the season of 1936 in American college and pro football. Very impactful in both of those levels of football. Now, I'm Darren Hayes, PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have introduced the American football timeline on PigskinDispatch.com. And if you haven't checked that out, we have tried to find all of the key and significant events in American football from each year, from 1869. We're building it all the way into the modern times. It's dynamic. We're going to keep adding to it. If you see something that we're missing that you think should be on there, we'd love to have your help. PigskinDispatch.com at gmail.com is where you can reach us, or put something in the comments of one of our YouTube videos on our site, PigskinDispatch.com, or one of our multiple social medias. We are at Pigskin Dispatch. So January 1st, 1936 sort of kicked off that year of 1936. It was the end of the 35 season, but the 22nd Rose Bowl game featured the Stanford Vow Boys. Now, if you're not familiar with the story of the Vow Boys, we have multiple stories on pigskindispatch.com. But basically, the Vow Boys were a group of Stanford Indians. Yes, they were the Stanford Indians back then, that played football together. They just had a lot of fun together. They were very close. And they made a vow to each other that they, when they were freshmen, I think they were, they when they couldn't play, they witnessed their team, the varsity team, getting defeated by USC and Cal, the two big rivals. The big game against Cal, of course, and USC was a big rival too back then. So they've made a vow that during their playing days at Stanford, they would not lose to USC or Cal, and they made good on it. And one of those games was the 22nd Rose Bowl. The Vow Boys played SMU. They had already beaten Cal. They had already beaten USC, had earned the right to represent the West Coast in the Rose Bowl, the 22nd Rose Bowl. And they ended up beating Southern Methodist University 7-0 in a game that featured both teams hailing from west of the Mississippi. First time that that happened that was not in wartime. So yeah, that's a very significant event there. And so the Vow Boys continued on in that march of keeping their promise. Then a month later, a little over a month later, February 8th, 1936, the very first National Football League draft takes place. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel, Philadelphia, the Eagles, whose owner was Burt Bell, who basically, according to many accounts, including Burt Bell's son Upton, which we've had on this program, it was Burt Bell's idea to have the draft. You know, back then, you know, you just was, it was a free-for-all, it was free agency basically all the time. The teams with the deeper pockets got the players. You know, the Bears and the Giants of the world got almost anybody they wanted. You had teams like Green Bay was struggling, having to get innovative. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia were newer teams, only 3 years in. Washington struggling to get these players. So the Eagles ended up proposing this. You know, Burt Bell, of the Eagles owner, proposed this. You know, the worst team from the year prior gets the first pick, and so on. So the way we do it now, it spread to all American sports. The Eagles ended up selecting Jay Berwanger of the University of Chicago with a first pick. Berwanger, that year, that 1935 season going in, he was the very first Heisman Trophy winner, which that first year was called the Downtown Athletic Trophy. They later, that next year, 1936, as a matter of fact, in December, renamed it the Heisman Trophy after John Heisman, who ended up being the athletic director of the downtown athletic club in Manhattan. So a bunch of firsts going on here. So the first draft pick is the first Heisman winner, basically, to the Eagles, who were the team that suggested that. So very important items there. September 2nd that year, 1936, the third Chicago Charities All-Star Game took place as the defending NFL champion Detroit Lions have played against the best players from the Chicago ranks. And the Lions had defeated the Giants in the 1935 title game, as we remember from our championship series last year. And it was, this is only the third time that the title game had been played in a short history. But the college stars came up, and they were a tough exhibition. It was a 7-all tie with 76,000 people paid attendance at Soldier Field in Chicago to watch. That had to be a thriller to watch. The 1936, September 10th, the second edition of the American Football League. Remember the first AFL was the Red Grange League that happened in the mid-1920s. A decade later, the second AFL comes about. And the Los Angeles Bulldogs defeated the Pittsburgh Americans 21-0 in the very first game of that second edition of the AFL. September 28th that year, Boston Redskins and the Brooklyn Dodgers played an NFL game that did not have a single penalty in that. And the Redskins prevailed in a penalty-free contest 30-6, according to ProFootballReference.com. The Yale kick controversy happened in this. We had a great story on that not too long ago on one of our YouTube shorts in Memorial Stadium, Baltimore, Maryland. Yale took on the undefeated Navy Shipmen, and during a loose ball play, Yale end Larry Kelly's foot struck the ball, sending it towards the Navy goal line, where the Eli recovered it at the 2-yard line, setting up the go-ahead score, 12-7 Yale victory, and it may have propelled Kelly to winning the Heisman that year, later in 1936, which we'll get to in a moment. October 20th, 1936, the very first Associated Press writers' poll for football came out that year. So first time, I think the coaches, the writers are voting in that. And the first time that poll ever comes out is that 1936, another very important item. Before that, they had like the Dickinson system and the Holgate system and some of the other ones where you would use mathematical formulas to try to figure out who the top team was and all that jazz. But now they're having actual people vote on that and the writers that are covering the games. October 31st that year at the Polo Grounds, the infamous 7 blocks of granite, playing for the Fordham Rams, defended their New York City turf against the powerful Pitt Panthers in an instant classic. We have that full story on that 36 Fordham Pitt game on there. So, some really exciting stuff. You can check that on our timeline. Pitt and Penn State squared off on the gridiron later, November 7th that year. Panthers won 34-7 in the Steel City. They played, Pitt played some other games. They ended up being number 5 ranked a week later and beat number 6 Nebraska 19-6 in Lincoln, Nebraska. So that was a big game. Then, Larry Kelly, we mentioned earlier, of Yale, won the Downtown Athletic Club's Heisman Trophy Award. The first year it was called the Heisman Trophy, December 2nd, 1936. Varsity Stadium in Toronto, the 24th Grey Cup, the Sarnia Imperials defeated the Ottawa Rough Riders 26-20 for Sarnia's second championship banner. Back then, you didn't have to be a pro team. They didn't have the Canadian Football League back then. It was just the best teams of the West playing the best teams of the East in the great country of Canada. On the 13th of that year at the Polo Grounds, the Green Bay Packers secured their first ever National Football League championship game win against the Boston Redskins. It was Boston's final game before they moved to Washington, D.C. The Packers' decisive 21-6 victory stemmed from Arnie Erber's passing and Don Hutson catching one of those touchdown passes, and Milt Gatenbein grabbed another. But it was interesting about that. We had a YouTube short on this that, the George Preston Marshall, the owner of the Redskins, very perturbed with the city of Boston at that point. He had the home field advantage. He asked the NFL to move the game to the Polo Grounds in New York City to play the Packers. That's why it was sort of played on a neutral site. And, of course, they get hammered 21-6 by the Packers. They get that first championship game win to win the NFL title in that. So some great stuff in the year of 1936. We hope you enjoy it. You can find all of this in more detail on our PigskinDispatch.com timeline. We have a couple links up near the top on the front page of Pigskin Dispatch. On any page you go on to, you can see the menus for the timeline to find that. We have a very powerful search box on PigskinDispatch.com. You can type in just about anything. It'll take you to any of our media we have, whether we've wrote an article, we have a podcast on it, we have a YouTube. It's going to take you to all that, and you have some great football, because we are the portal of American football history, and we want to do that for you to check out. But check out our timelines. Let us know what you think. PigskinDispatch@gmail.com. Check us out on YouTube, the Pigskin Dispatch channel. And like we said, on X, we are at Pigskin Dispatch. Facebook, we have a Pigskin Dispatch page, and many others. So check us out there. Try some of our games, and maybe sign up for our newsletter. Comes out every weekend, and you can catch some more great stuff of football content for history. Till next time, everybody, have a great gridiron day. And next week, we go into the season of 1969. So some great things. Think about that for a moment. All the great stuff we get to talk about there as we bounce through the gridiron timeline. Have a great day and great week, everybody.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network, and we're able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You could be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.